always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
With some high-profile help on Thursday, the campaign Winning for Missouri Education turned in more than 340,000 signatures to have voters decide whether to legalize wagering on professional sports.
Several of our citizens cross over to every bordering state except for one that has legalized sports wagering. So, you know, as always, the citizens will work around us when we don't do what they ask us to do.
If the Secretary of State's office verifies enough signatures, the question will go on the November 5th ballot.
4:06, and again, welcome to the Friday edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. My partner Tim Jones is off today, but in studio is Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor of RedState.com, who is filling in today. Susie, are you a gambler?
Somewhat. Not really a sports bets, though.
You're one of the old lady slot machine person.
No, more like roulette and three cards.
Oh, okay.
You know, Texas Hold'em, that kind of stuff.
So you're like a high roller wannabe.
Oh yeah, that's me. That's totally me.
Got it. Susie, on the line with us is Scott Fawn. He's the publisher of the Missouri Times and host of This Week in Missouri Politics on ABC 30. Which you can watch at 9 a.m. and it's on News Talk STL at 8:30 on Sunday mornings. We've got everything all Missouri to talk with Scott Fawn, the myth, the man, the legend. Scott, how are you, my friend?
You know, I just can't get my head around seeing Susie at a penny, at a nickel slot, I guess, burning heaters, drinking well gin at 2 in the morning. It's just, I can't get my head around it.
What I couldn't get my head around is she at the penny slot machine and she's working the two on the side of her and the two on the right side and the left side. You know how those people are. They are
with
controlling by four or five.
With a cigarette hanging out my mouth with the ash really long. Yeah.
Exactly.
You can't win if you don't play.
That's true.
Exactly. All right, Scott, let's dip into some politics here, man. You are the publisher of the Missouri Times. You know all things Missouri politics. I got to talk with you first about the filibuster, the historic filibuster that happened yesterday. Also, the resignation from the Freedom Caucus from Senator Jill Carter. Talk about those issues and what you know.
Well, look, I'm an admirer of Bill Igel. I think Bill Igel is he's the best interview in the party. I think he's the best orator in the party. I think a lot of the ideas he has, like making bills, these four subset on the calendar for a day so people can actually read them before they're up, is good. This filibuster, I'm afraid he's going to look bad on. They filibustered to keep the FRA, which funds rural hospitals. It's a federal program. Kit Bond is the innovator of it. I understand it makes for it takes two sentences to explain the FRA, so it makes a bad Facebook post. But they know this needs to happen. He knows that. The filibuster, I don't think it got anything. And you know what I like about politics, Chris? It's because it's going to be a scoreboard, right? I've seen some folks say, oh, we got, and I wrote a column about this to the subscribers of the Missouri Times. You know, Bill's camp, Igel Incorporated, will tell you, well, we got them to agree to pass IP reform, even if it's a filibuster. I don't know anybody else that's saying that. They collected signatures to PQ it, but that doesn't mean, you don't know what's going to be in that bill. They passed IP reform out of the Senate already. I wonder, you know, what happens. I guess we'll tell. The great part about politics, Monday at 2, your Missouri Senate will come in. And I think the floor leader intends, and the floor leader is a very conservative and very headstrong and very tough lady named Cindy O'Loughlin. I think she intends to go to a third read of the FRA. And I think there is some members of Igel's caucus who think that they're going to get on to IP reform. I just think, if I had to guess, Bill's going to come up short. They're going to go to the FRA. Now, they may filibuster it for 2 weeks, that's possible. But I'm not sure what they got out of, I guess we'll see what they got out of the filibuster, because like you said, I mean, we'll see. There's a scoreboard. The scoreboard will tell the tale Monday at 2. I'll be watching.
Hmm.
Scott, as somebody who is a political junkie but not as familiar with the nuts and bolts of it all, what is IP reform ever going to get done?
Well, the Senate did it. I mean, it comes down to this. Do you want – everybody said I interviewed on my show, This Week in Missouri Politics, all the Republicans said adding a bunch of junk to hide your real motive in an initiative petition is wrong. They all said that, right? Now they're doing the exact same thing. They're Clean Missouri and IP reform. So now everything they said was awful is now great. They passed the question to put on the ballot to ask voters, should it be harder to amend the Missouri Constitution, which I firmly believe it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But then the House said, but you had some people say, no, we want to try to trick folks. We want to throw in illegals voting, which is just not happening. I mean, I get it. It's nice to scare people. It's not real. They want to throw a bunch of distractions, and just like Clean Missouri did, the exact same thing the Democrats did. The Democrats now think it's terrible. That's the exact same thing they did. The Republicans have just as much hypocrisy. And so, you could have absolutely sent to the voters the question, do you want to make it harder to amend the Missouri Constitution? And they could vote on that. There's some Republicans that don't think they can win that argument. So they wanted to, just like Democrats wanted to gerrymander House and Senate districts,
mm-hmm.
they didn't think they could pass that. So they put a bunch of distractions. The Missouri Supreme Court ruled that was okay in a ruling I think has had terrible consequences for our state. It's just been a terrible ruling to let you put all this junk in and try to confuse people. But the court said you could do it. So the Republicans are trying to do it. Do I think they could just ask the simple question to the voters? Sure. They've already passed that. That would pass again and take 20 minutes. But the question is, can you put all these other distractions and nonsense in? I don't think they're going to be able to do that. So I think they're going to have to, at some point, you're going to have the real folks that'll tell the tale. Do you want this on the ballot in a straight question, or do you want all this nonsense and it not go to the ballot? And we'll get to see who's really for IP reform and who's really not.
Speaking with Scott Faughn, publisher of Missouri Times and host of This Week in Missouri Politics. You can catch that on ABC 30 on Sunday at 9 a.m. And you can listen to the show Sundays on our station, News Talk STL, at 8:30. Okay, Scott, the other part of this historic filibuster was the resignation from the Freedom Caucus of freshman Senator Jill Carter. As I said, you are an insider there in Missouri politics. What do you know about that? And are those relationships strained to the point where they can't be repaired, or what's the deal?
Look, I mean, the rift in the Senate, if you want to talk hogs, dogs, and logs, goes back to leadership races 6 years ago. Bob Onder and Denny Hoskins lost to Dave Schatz and Caleb Rowden, and there's been a crew that's been ticked off ever since. And they can't agree on anything. There's so much bad blood. They all say it's the other one's fault. It's like separating junior high girls at this point. I mean, it's probably best just wait out another 2 weeks and let different players play the game. That's what this all goes back to. Jill Carter, I think it's a breath of fresh air. I know, and when she first got elected, nobody liked her and didn't like the fact she beat an incumbent. That seat, I like to Bill White. No beef with Bill White. Mm-hmm. That wasn't Bill White's seat. That was the people of Jasper Newton County's seat. And if they want to elect a different senator, that's their business. The tradition in the Senate is you don't campaign against your fellow senators, which I think Senator Igel didn't uphold that tradition. But Jill Carter can run. Anybody can run. There's no wrong in that. She joined this conservative caucus, and I'll tell you where it went south. I watched it. I was sitting in the gallery. The education bill was up. Lots of money comes in the education debate on the charter side. And Jill Carter has an idea to free some of these schools from DESE, to get DESE out of your local schools. She offered her amendment, and you need five senators standing for a roll call vote. The only person that stood with her was Mike Moon. And keep in mind, Jill Carter had filibustered for days and days over these petty fights, over just personalities. It's not conservative versus Rhino. It's just petty personal stuff. And she did all that. And she doesn't have a problem with you, right? She's new. She wasn't here for the leadership raise and all the bad blood, but she hung with those guys. And then when she wanted her thing, just to get a vote on her amendment, none of them were there. And whether you liked her idea, you didn't, or whatever, to her, I think she felt like she was hung out to dry. And I think the resignation started a month ago, and it just became public now because she wasn't going to filibuster with them if they weren't going to stick up for her. Now, again, you can say, well, that's personal and all that, but it is what it is.
Scott, I saw that you had your pride and joy. You got a Kit Bond pen. I saw that on Twitter this morning. So that made your day.
I value that so much. Absolutely. One of the greatest Missouri statesmen. I think you got Thomas Hart Benton. You could talk about Senator Symington, maybe. Governor Dunklin obviously did a great amount for the state. I think Kit Bond is on anyone's Mount Rushmore of Missouri statesmen. What an amazing man that did so much for the state of Missouri.
There you go.
And to have someone send that to me, it's a very special pen that was used in signing some of the port legislation for the Boot Hill where I'm from. It is a prized possession of mine, and there is not a finer man in this state, maybe ever, than Christopher S. Kit Bond.
Is it going to go in a shadow box, or are you going to leave it on your desk?
I don't know. If you ever get something sent to you that's just so fancy and so nice and you value it, you just don't know what to do with it.
True.
I don't quite know what to do with it. I put it on Facebook page. I wanted my mama to see it, but I don't quite know. I really, that's the most of my weekend thinking about is how I can feature this pen from Governor Bond.
Speaking with Scott Fawn, publisher of the Missouri Times. All right, Scott, let's get into some of these races, statewide races. First, the governor's race. There's been two polls that have come out recently, one showing Ashcroft blowing away the field. Another poll came out this week that showed it very, very close. Your assessment?
Well, I think there's a look, I think Jay Ashcroft could have ran away and hit with this race. The fact is he's had some snafus in the race. He's not raising money. Mike Kehoe is up on TV in Springfield. This race is tightening in Kehoe's favor. If Kehoe was never going to be able to win this race going away, Ashcroft, because of his father, his name ID, and because of the fact Jay's ran successfully twice in his own right statewide, he's going to be the front runner until the 4th of July. But I'll tell you, Mike Kehoe has been raising an amazing amount of money. There's something happening, and I can't put my finger on it, but I think it's just the force of Mike Kehoe's personality. The crowd, he drew 300 people in Donovan, Missouri. That doesn't happen. Fair dealing, to be exact. He drew he had a $200,000 fundraiser in Dexter. That's like if everyone in Stoddard County gave him 10 bucks. There's something going on with Mike Kehoe and the way he's touching people. And the way they're then getting motivated to touch others, there's something going on. I think a return to common sense may be hitting some places. I don't know if it's made it to the city folks yet, but Kehoe's got enough money. And look, let's be honest. The Ashcroft campaign has a floor of, let's say, a fourth of the voters. I don't know what they're doing to get more people into that tent. The fundraising is anemic for a front runner. Jay Ashcroft should have a lot more money than he does. Mike Kehoe has a lot of momentum. And I think you're seeing, I mean, Senator Igold, again, best interview, best orator. I think some of the antics in the Senate are making it hard for him to get meetings to pitch those big donors and land that.
Scott, let me ask you this follow-up, and then the big Achilles heel for Lieutenant Governor Kehoe, of course, is his support of the gas tax. And also, I think Achilles heel for him is also he's raising a lot of money, but it's
John Ashcroft.
But he's raising it a lot from lobbyists and these other groups. How badly will that hurt him, especially the gas tax?
Look, Peter Hershen is the owner and founder of Silver Dollar City. Johnny Morris is not a lobbyist. Lobbyists don't have the kind of money that Kehoe is raising. I mean, yes, I'm sure groups that have lobbyists are giving to him, but I mean, Mike Kehoe's raising money from people that, I mean, I have a hard time seeing the Camp Peters as lobbyists. They're their own diamond dog food. I think that where your money comes from never matters to anyone ever. Totally irrelevant. I think the gas tax, you can argue it, like it or not. I mean, John Ashcroft, he brought in the largest gas tax in history, just on a percent basis, pales in comparison to what Kehoe voted for. So, look, I think folks are going to hit him. It's something he's going to have to deal with in a Republican primary. We'll see if it sticks. I think there's a tax hike Mike thing I saw was kind of catchy. I think Igel came up with that. We'll see. I would say right now, though, the momentum in this race is with Kehoe. You know, if you just look at the numbers, and I haven't bought TV, and I haven't studied buying TV in a while, I don't see how Ashcroft is up before the end of June. And I think Kehoe is only ramping up more his TV buy. This race is going to tighten. I don't see how it doesn't tighten in Kehoe's favor. And if you're Jay Ashcroft, your main hope would be, after session, they run some polls and some interest groups decide, okay, you know, Jay might not have been our guy, but we'll go in there and give him $250,000 and he'll be our guy and we'll be able to buy him cheap because he's a little desperate. And that's where Jay would raise $2-3 million and be able to fund him. If Kehoe tightens this race up, those polls are not going to show him as the easy favorite. And some of that money he's counting on coming in as I'm the favorite, you better get on my side now, isn't going to be there. So Kehoe's got a nice strategy to tighten this thing up. And you can just tell where he is running TV ads in Springfield, this race is tightening. So we'll see. I think Kansas City's next on their list and SEMO. I just wonder how much that name will hold up if Jay Ashcroft doesn't get on TV till the 25th of June or something, and Kehoe is on statewide by Memorial Day weekend. I mean, where he's running ads, it's working. And I don't know where Igel has the money to be on TV until maybe even the middle of July. So his fundraising is going to have to amp up in order to be on there. And we can all talk about the, you know, we're going to do all these internet things, and that's a fine thing, and it's growing in influence. But I'm just going to tell you, end of the day, you better buy that TV. You better buy that News Talk STL. You better buy that Rural Radio. That moves people. This other stuff probably does move people, but I can tell you it definitely moves people to buy News Talk STL. Everybody listening to this is voting in the Republican primary, and they're voting before 10 o'clock that morning. And right. And the folks watching the evening news and the Cardinal games, I get it. I'm a dinosaur, and everybody's smarter than me, but I'll be honest with you. You better buy that traditional media if you want to win, and that ain't cheap. And right now, Kehoe's he's in the lead when he's sitting on his wallet.
That is Scott Fawn, publisher of Missouri Times and host of This Week in Missouri Politics on ABC 30, Sundays at 9 a.m. and on News Talk STL, Sundays at 8:30. You can also catch him on Twitter or X at Scott Fawn and at MissouriTimes.com. Scott, thank you so much for your time, my friend, and look forward to talking with you during this busy political season.
Always enjoy the visit, and Susie, bet on black.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
I don't know where that came from, but
roulette.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about Passenger 57.
No.
that's where my
Scott,
mind went.
Scott,
I'm like,
just showed he actually listens to me, which I appreciate. So,
come on, Susie. I listen to you too. Come on, that hurts. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Patrick Tu. He's a senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. We'll talk about not prosecuting nonviolent drug offenses in our cities. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We are right off Skinker right now, right in front of Washington University property. And as you can see, there is a fence right here, and the fence lines all the way down Skinker. And in fact, it wraps around Forest Park Parkway. Now, as you mentioned, the university says the fence is up because of an upcoming commencement. But it also comes up just a day before another planned protest right across the street.
5:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor of RedState.com, is filling in for my partner Tim Jones today. As usual, every other Friday, we have Patrick Tuohy, Senior Fellow from the Show Me Institute, but we got something new for you today.
And now, a man who comes alive when there's bad public policy in Missouri, Patrick Tuohy.
Oh my God.
Well done, Joey.
That's why we have the best producer in St. Louis radio. Joey, that was very good. That's the first time that I even heard it. Patrick, what would be your new theme?
I'm flattered. Thank you.
You know, you've made it on News Talk STL when you get a regular theme. I just want you to know that.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent the commercial break trying to find another line from Passenger 57 that is worth quoting. And there is no other line from that movie that is worth repeating.
Oh, boy. I hear you. appreciate it. Patrick, let's talk about a article that you wrote for the Kansas City Star about not prosecuting nonviolent drug offenses in the cities and their impacts on the homicides. You know, the government, St. Louis City, I'm sure Kansas City does too, will try to tell us that the murder rates are down, crime is down, you know, everything is going great, when we know that a lot of these crimes are not being reported. And so that looks like crime is dwindling. Tell us more about your article, Patrick.
So a lot of people in Kansas City, and I'm sure St. Louis as well, will complain about a particular prosecution. Maybe they thought the sentence wasn't hard enough, or maybe they thought the plea deal let the person off too easily. And, you know, I don't envy the job of any prosecutor, and I don't want to stand over their shoulder and question the decisions they make in any particular case. But in Kansas City, for the past few years, our prosecutor, our county prosecutor, has said that she does not want to prosecute nonviolent drug offenses. And that's a real shame, because I think data from other cities show that not only do nonviolent drug offenders often go on to offend with worse crimes, but we've got a real drug overdose problem in Jackson County. And when we fail to interdict people who have drug problems, we're doing them a disservice. And so more than the prosecution in any individual case, I think the policy needs to change. I really like what Gabe Gore has said. You know, you need to prosecute every crime. That doesn't mean you lock everybody up, but you at least introduce diversion programs, drug courts. You do something to stand in the way of that offender and tell them, we don't accept this.
Patrick, what is your sense of the motivation behind that policy? Is it about just trying to make the best use of the available resources and focus on some of the more, you know, more serious violent crimes? Or is it a policy consideration that kind of is along the lines of the, you know, criminal justice reform and that sort of thing?
Well, I take Jane Peters Baker, our prosecutor, at her word. In 2001, she wrote a letter to the Kansas City police saying, exactly to your point, that this was an issue of focusing limited resources on violent crime. And so that's what she wants to do. And again, I respect that. You can't prosecute every crime all the time. But I think looking back at the 2.5 years since we've had that policy, and I don't know that it is actually an official policy, but in the 2.5 years since we've seen that letter, we haven't seen an improvement in the crime, the homicide, or the drug stats in Jackson County. So whatever its intention, I don't think it's bearing fruit. And again, it's not okay that people in a municipality or in a county just be told that there's a certain level of crime that they should accept, because I don't think that's true. And to Chris's point, people aren't reporting crime because they think, what's the point? And I think we've all been in that situation where you just say, well, what's the point? It's just going to be a hassle for me and nothing's going to come of it. And that's not acceptable either.
Speaking with Patrick Tuohy, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. Patrick, what I want to ask you is, this prosecutor, is she one a George Soros prosecutor? And what are the authorities saying when not prosecuting nonviolent drug offenses hasn't cut down the homicide rate? Do they have an excuse for that? Just not enough time has passed? What are they saying?
Well, I don't know that Jane Peters Baker is one of the Soros types. I think her politics might be in line. But again, her personal history, I take her at her word. I think that she wants to do the best. It's just not working in this case. Oftentimes, what we hear in Kansas City and Jackson County is really frustrating because they just want to blame guns. And I get that. But Jackson County has the same gun ownership rate as Johnson County does, right across the state line in Kansas, and they don't have a crime problem. And ultimately, I don't know that guns are more accessible today than they were 20 years ago. But again, even if they were, we have a homicide problem that is much, much worse. And blaming guns, I get, is tempting, but it doesn't get us towards a solution. I feel that people who want to talk about guns just aren't serious about fixing the problem. They're just looking to place blame somewhere else.
Patrick, you mentioned Gabe Gore, who's obviously the circuit attorney in St. Louis now, thankfully was brought in and replaced Kim Gardner once she left. And we don't hear a whole lot about him in the news, which I think is a good thing. But obviously he had his work cut out for him in terms of sort of turning things around from how the bad situation that we were in when he came in. But are we starting to see a difference in St. Louis in terms of, you know, more effective prosecution approach to things?
You know, Mr. Gore is climbing out of such a hole in St. Louis that I don't know I would hold him to account just yet. I think at the time he had, 250 murder cases that they had to climb out from under, and I'm sure he's handling it. And to your first point, part of my respect for prosecutors is that they aren't necessarily in the news, and they shouldn't be. When people criticize a particular case, it's really not the prosecutor's place to come out and defend themselves. It's just kind of the nature of the job. They can take criticism, but they've got to keep their head down. And so the difference, of course, is that Gore has been in St. Louis for just a short period of time, but Jean Peters Baker has been in Jackson County for years now. And so I think it is fair to hold her accountable for the policies that she has promulgated for the past 8 years, whereas Gabe Gore is again having to show up and fix somebody else's problems and really turn that office around.
We're speaking with Patrick Toohey, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. Patrick, for the past several weeks, we've been talking to you about the stadiums there in Kansas City that they want to redo for the Royals and the Chiefs. There was a vote on that. Kansas City voters rejected that back in April. I want to ask you, does it surprise you that I saw a story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch yesterday that said that the St. Louis Cardinals, on the 20th anniversary coming up of Busch Stadium, says that Busch Stadium needs some renovations?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, unfortunately. I do think that they are facing headwinds even before they've made a particular ask. And maybe it was a trial balloon. I think it was the Riverfront Times that broke the story, and the owners immediately kind of backpedaled. And look, that's a good thing. I think the ask, the case they make in 2024, has to be much different than the arguments and cases they made 20 years ago. People are, I think they're more understanding of the issue. I think social media has made people more aware of all the research out there. They're able to organize more easily. And they are showing, and not just in Missouri, but around the country, a greater hesitance to shell money out. And maybe part of it is just the economy that we're in. They're not feeling so generous. Part of it, I'm sure, is that maybe the teams aren't performing so well, although the Chiefs out here have been doing well. So I think it's a combination of things. But I am really glad that people left, right, and center are more skeptical of these asks. And I'm really glad that team owners have to be much more thoughtful before they kind of just do the same old, give us money.
Patrick, doesn't it also tie into kind of what we started out talking about, and that's the crime issue? Because I hear more and more people reluctant to drive down to a game. They're worried about parking. They're worried about walking to the stadium. They're worried about safety in downtown St. Louis, which is a crying shame. But that's the reality we find ourselves in 2024.
No, you're exactly right. And we heard the same issues in Kansas City, where they wanted to build a downtown park that was going to have no parking, really. And so the question was, people that are accustomed to going to the Truman Sports Complex, parking in that huge lot and tailgating, are now going to have to park on the street, walk a few minutes. And crime is a real issue in St. Louis and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And it's something that these guys have to be worried about. And of course, the other thing is that games really aren't for grandpa to take the grandkids to anymore. A lot of families are priced out. Professional games are more of kind of a corporate a gift from corporations who hand them out to vendors or clients or whatnot, and the nature of it has changed, and so maybe with fewer people going to see games, they don't have a connection with the teams and maybe are less likely to see a return in giving them tax money.
Patrick, besides the pride issue, how much of an impact would it be if the Royals and the Chiefs crossed over the state line and settled there in Kansas City? I mean, it's the same metropolitan area. Would it be a big deal besides just pride?
No, to be honest with you. So much of the economic research, I know, it feels weird saying that, but I can't really figure out the great impact. Now, look, you've got people who will drive to the complex now, and maybe they stop at a restaurant on their way in, and those restaurants would lose out on those few nights a year. But as far as regionally, it wouldn't make a difference. I am probably just as far from Truman Sports Complex now in South Kansas City as I would be to going out to where they want to put the parks in Kansas. And again, I'm not spending any more money. I'm just changing my decision from movie or bowling to go see a game. It doesn't matter to me whether I spend the money in Kansas or Missouri. And, you know, a lot of this research is they just look at economic activity before a stadium is put into a city or after a stadium leaves, and there's just no change. So you say aside from pride, I understand that pride is a real part of it, but that's so tough to nail down as far as what is the actual value and how much are people willing to spend to feel good about themselves and their city. And I don't think it's very much.
Susie, I have a final question if you don't.
All right, go right ahead.
Patrick, I have my final question for you, my friend, is regarding your theme. Is there any suggestions that you'd like for that? Anything changes we can make for you?
No, I'm going to have to listen to that a few more times. You know, I always say, as long as you guys spell my name right, I'm happy with however you say it.
What kind of name is that, by the way? I've always been curious.
That Irish? It's very Irish. There are a whole bunch of different spellings, some with double
yes.
some without the E. But it all, you know, I think we all went through Ellis Island and they said, well, we're going to spell it however we want to.
Because I've known you a long time, but I've also known someone with a similar last name as yours, but they don't spell it the way that you do. They live in Pennsylvania. So you are right about that. I've seen your name spelled probably two or three different ways easily.
Yeah, it's a shame when I see people with the same name who just don't spell it right. It's heartbreaking.
Exactly. We've been speaking with Patrick Tuohy. He's the senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. And we enjoy talking with you, my friend. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Great. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks, Patrick.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I thought that was Irish, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, the Patrick
sure.
kind of gives you a little bit of a
yeah,
hint.
Yeah. But seriously, that name is spelled like two or three different different ways. Susie, we're almost done here, and we can start the weekend. When we come back, we'll lighten it up a little bit, give you some news you may not have heard of or some news you can use. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Hello, I'm with the Biden campaign.
Yeah, yeah, I voted for Biden last time.
That's fantastic.
Is it? Everything costs more. Food, gas, rent.
Okay, but Biden's helping pay rent for newcomers to America from around the world.
You mean illegal immigrants? I'm struggling to pay my bills, but Biden's paying rent for illegals? They get handouts and I'm paying for it.
But Biden can still count on your vote, right?
Things were better before Biden. I'm voting for Trump.
Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
5:49. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. That is an ad that Donald Trump's super PAC is using in rural Georgia to target African-American voters. I always love as a Republican, a black Republican, to see the party engage in outreach efforts. But I have to tell you, Joey and Susie, that probably had to be the worst AI generated black voice I've ever heard in my life.
See, now you get my laughter from yesterday. There's something about the voices that have to work right. You think that one was phony, huh?
I do. I do not think that was an actual red-blooded, living African-American in that commercial. I don't.
That'd be cool stuff.
Kind of reminded me a little bit of, you know, in Beverly Hills Cop when Eddie Murphy is like imitating the cops and he's kind of making
fun of Banana in the tailpipe?
Yes. That kind of reminded me of.
Yeah, it sounded like that guy trying to sound have an Ebonics accent a little bit, but I was just detecting way too much white there for that to be an African American. But people might say that about me. They think you're black. Really, I had no idea.
Yeah, but AI isn't AI like geared towards more ethnic minorities and racial minorities? Wasn't that the whole skinny a couple months ago when they were talking about?
I don't know. I know that facial recognition software has trouble recognizing black and minority faces. Is that all? That's all the same, isn't it? Well, AI, facial recognition.
It's like the reverse issue, but like Google programmed their Gemini program, I think it was called. And so like if you said, want a picture of the Pope and it would render it was a black Pope. And it was like, wait a second, I don't think that's historically accurate.
I remember that. I saw that online and somebody wanted to see like pictures of the founding fathers.
Yes.
And George Washington was black. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun intellectual experiment, like saying like what would it be like if they were, but this was literally like, this is what it was generating. So there was some interesting algorithms at play there.
You know, in all seriousness, though, it's a good move for the Trump campaign and for Republicans in general to reach out to the African-American vote. We see that Donald Trump is polling 20% plus among African-Americans as a whole. He gained 20% of the black African-American male vote in 2020. I've seen polls, Susie, that say that Joe Biden right now is garnering about 67% of the black vote, which is absolutely horrible. New York Times had an article out last week saying that Biden should not bank on support from black Americans, especially in Georgia. There's a woman here that they quote. She's 32-year-old Kimberly Jolison. She said she doesn't directly blame Biden for higher interest rates. She thinks the former President Trump is, quote, more in tune with the needs of business owners. That is something that that's a bit surprising to hear an African-American say that, especially an African-American woman. Voters in Georgia, they make up 27% of the electorate there in Georgia. So that ad there that the Trump super PAC campaign may be a good idea. It is a good idea. Maybe they read that New York Times article.
maybe. No, and you're right. The outreach is important and is needed. They maybe need to be a little bit more polished with it, but
no AI black generated voices.
Let's be a little real.
Hire a brother. Just go hire a black guy, man. Come on.
Are you offering yourself up for the job, Chris?
No, but I know a guy that does voiceovers. I know a guy. I went to high school with him. He does great voiceovers. Got a great deep Afrocentric sounding voice. He would have been a great for them. You know, speaking of Georgia, let's stay in Georgia. You know, Morehouse College, which is a famous in the African-American community, historically black college. They always have Democratic presidents come there to do the commencement speech. Joe Biden is scheduled to give the commencement speech at Morehouse this year.
Oh.
But they have expressed concerns on the campus about him giving the speech, and you know what it stems around Israel and Hamas. It's unfortunate. I hate to see that a lot of the black liberals and the black students, they are falling in line into this anti-Semitism. But Morehouse may rescind the invitation for Joe Biden to speak at this year's commencement because of what's going on in the Middle East and our stance with Israel.
His campaign will probably be relieved.
Why do you say that?
I mean, at this point, every time Joe Biden gives a speech of any sort, there's like, it's gaffastic. So,
yeah, that's true.
I mean,
that's true.
And they can blame it on people's, you know, politics instead of his abilities.
Susie, I know you are a huge Taylor Swift fan, so I know this information you already know. But her album has hit number one on the Billboard 200. She has tied Jay-Z for the most top-ranked solo albums on the charts history. It doesn't show me this. Joey, you know how many. How many albums has she hit number one?
I know she has 31 tracks on this new album, and she was 31 on the Spotify top list, so yeah. It was people just listening to that album over and over.
Yeah, I am not a Taylor Swift fan. I mean, I'm not.
What?
I'm not,
really?
Yeah, no. No, I'm not. Really.
I'm joking. I know. So I would be very hard if you were.
I was surprised. Aware. No, some of her early stuff I don't mind, but no, I'm just not caught up in the, I'm not a Swiftie. So I'm not surprised that her album is doing well. I knew she had released it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's a force to be reckoned with from a, you know, marketing and success standpoint. Can't argue with that.
You know, Susan, we usually try to keep it light as we end the show, but I want to get a bit serious here, especially since you are an attorney. And I always like to pick my co-host's legal minds. This week, Harvey Weinstein his conviction was overthrown, his rape conviction. They said that he will be retried on his charges in 2020, from 2020. That was his conviction. He will be retried on that. What's your thoughts on this case?
Yeah.
As much as you know about it.
It's somewhat limited, but basically what happened here is that, you know, setting aside his guilt or innocence and the bad acts that he is pretty much, everyone kind of agrees that he committed. Procedurally, the court got some stuff wrong. And the good thing about this ruling is it doesn't let him set him free. It doesn't say he's not, you know, shouldn't be retried. It just says, look, you didn't dot I's and cross T's. You didn't follow the proper procedures. And everybody, even Harvey Weinstein, is entitled to those proper procedures. The bright spot, if you will call it that, in that is that may in the long run actually help Donald Trump. Because there are similar,
do tell.
Well, there are similar issues in terms of admitting, like letting in too much witness testimony and things that really aren't pertinent to the charges at issue. And, so this could be something. I mean, it was the Court of Appeals that's overseeing the court that, or the case that he's in right now. So it could all come back in the long run and actually play a role in that.
Excellent. Thank you. Like I said, I usually try to lighten it up, but I saw that on my sheet. I said, I want to ask Susie about that because she is an attorney. Susie, thank you so much for joining me yesterday and today. I always enjoy co-hosting the show with you, especially when we got to do it crazy like this.
Yeah.
When you're in studio and I am out of studio. Larry Connors USA is up next, 6 to 8. A reminder, I will be guest hosting the Mike Ferguson in the Morning Show this coming Monday. You've been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1. On News Talk STL. Drive safe. Have a great weekend.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.